Greetings, my friends. This is Mark Foster of the Newport Legacy Group bringing you another episode of Newport Legacy Insights. Today's podcast may be a bit longer than normal since I have three terrific guests. I have Kevin Dineen, our technology analyst, Eric Podeker, our healthcare analyst, and Andrew Dubinsky, our wealth management economist. I've gathered them to discuss the concept of productivity. What brought this to my attention was the potential conflicting view within our global organization between two economists, that being Paul Donovan in London and Andrew Dubinsky here in the United States. Our global economist, Paul Donovan, wrote a blog piece on July 17th titled, "The Danger of Depending on Productivity." In this blog, he refers to productivity gains as pixie dust. He is hardly a productivity optimist. On July 6th, Jason Dreo and Andrew Dubinsky wrote a report titled, "A Roadmap for the AI Economy." In their report, they state, "The economic and macro regime impact depends on an AI flywheel of productivity gains, compute demand, and CapEx to continue spinning. AI's ultimate economic impact hinges on the degree of productivity gains. They are modest so far, but AI could add as much as 1% to the long-term average of 2%. Jason's tone and Andrew's tone, their tone is clearly more optimistic than what Paul Donovan believes. But before we jump into the discussion with the three of them, I want to give you a little update on the market because our friend David Lefkowitz just put out a new blog piece. So we're currently in the middle of the second quarter earnings announcements. Today is July 27th. And on Friday, July 24th, David put out his update. And his update is titled, "Strong Earnings, Watching Rates and Oil." He stated his view for the year, for the year end, for the S&P is 7,900 to 8,200, which would produce a overall return of 17 to 18% for the year. Now, mind you, so far, the market's up about 8%. So he stated that the market has lagged due to concerns about interest rates and oil prices. They have weighed on the market so far, but he still is expecting that 17 to 18% overall. So he sounds pretty optimistic. So without further ado, though, let's jump into our investigation of what the possible productivity effects could be that will impact our new AI economy. And now we're joined by the three from our CIO, Kevin Dineen, Eric Podeker, and Andrew Dubinsky. I'm first going to lead off with a question to Andrew. Basically, why am I doing this call? I mean, the call is about productivity, so what the heck actually is productivity and why does it matter? So, Andrew, why does productivity matter? What is the overall effect on GDP, on profits, and or wages when productivity rises? And why should those of us on the call care about it?
Yeah, I mean, productivity is just like one of the main inputs to growth. And if you think about nominal GDP and like different ways nominal GDP can go up, you know, it can go up because prices go up. It can go up because you have more people working, or you can go up because productivity goes up. You're smarter, you're faster at making the same thing. You're making the same thing in less amount of time or using less amount of capital. And it's that last part of growth where you can generate more growth without generating more inflation. If you get too many people working, you usually get some kind of overheating. So if you get more productivity, you can get both more wage income because you can pay people more. Arguably, they're generating more output, so you can pay them more without generating more inflation. And since it's generating more output, you're probably going to get more profits as well. So you can get both pieces of the pie, income and profits, can increase. So this is why it's such an important part of growth that it can, over long periods of time, really increase the wealth of people or companies.
Yeah, exactly. And the productivity that we're talking about now, it's this whole AI economy. And so we could go to Kevin here. And Kevin, tell us, what does history tell us about the impact of technology on both the job market and on productivity?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. So I think ultimately, technology is always about productivity. As Andrew was highlighting, productivity is a key input to growth. Growth creates opportunities, and that opportunity usually is reflected in aggregate employment growing. I would say this, that aggregate employment could grow, but there could be dislocations in the interim, and I'll talk about that in a second. But I think that ultimately, technology is used as sort of a force multiplier to make productive people more productive. And as Andrew pointed out, that's one of the key things that drives wage growth. And I think sometimes, you know, it's hard to show where exactly productivity is, but I think as a thought experiment, maybe for those who are doubting what AI will do for productivity because we're not seeing it yet, there was an economist, I think, in the 90s, and Andrew could probably provide the name, but the quote was, "You see productivity from computers everywhere, but in the economic data." I think there's sort of like a scaling issue here sometimes, like we just haven't had the scale of gains. But imagine if you didn't have the internet, or if you didn't have software that you rely on every day in your job, how much less productive you'd be. So just because you don't see it at the sort of early innings doesn't mean it's not there and doesn't mean that it's not on the come. And in terms of jobs, as I mentioned, productivity drives growth. Growth is a key for job creation, but the jobs won't necessarily be the same. There will be some dislocations. And, you know, the example I've always used with eMark is, I think it was 1904 when the first Model T came off the manufacturing line. Probably a horrible day to get into the horse and buggy trade, but probably a great day to open up a gas station, yep, or to get into the road building business, or to really be imaginative and think about refrigerated trucking to get beef from Kansas City to New York. And by the way, that took 20 years after the Model T. So it's an enabler ultimately.
Well, that's pretty incredible. 20 years. Actually, how long did it take to get general air conditioning into New York? Probably took the 20 years too, and they put two and two together. Yeah, put it in a truck. So why might AI be different?
I think for AI to not follow the historical pattern of driving productivity gains, I mean, I think if you want to take issue with the technology itself and say it just doesn't work, I mean, I think that the biggest skepticism I hear around AI and the underlying technology is actually from the people who don't use it as much as I do. I think it's not a question about the technology itself. I think for corporates, for enterprises, for businesses to implement it, I think there's a lot of moving pieces here, right? They have to make some pretty big decisions around their IT architecture. They have to get their data estates in order, meaning get the data wrangled the right way, have the right permissioning around it, the right security around it, traceability, sort of like audit worthy or audit ready is maybe a better way to put it. And look, I think AI, as it could fully be implemented, will fundamentally change the way a lot of businesses operate. And the human capital, headcount, employees that they're going to need. There's no magic wand to do that, right? Every company is going to have to sort of fumble through the dark in their own way to get there. So I think that's sort of one of the hurdles to adoption. And maybe this is a cycle that takes longer than we're all expecting for it to play out because of that.
Yeah, we're a lot lumpier. But given your understanding of the underlying technology, how do you think it's going to change the structure of the economy over an extended period?
Yeah, I mean, I have a thesis. We'll have to see how it plays out. But when I think about technology, I think there's always returns to scale of technology.
What do you mean by that?
If you look at the big technology companies, right, the big cloud service providers, they are increasing their margins. And this is pre-ChatGPT. But just what history would show you is the more they were spending on infrastructure, the more that accelerated their growth, and not just accelerated their growth, it had strong incremental margins, meaning every dollar was more profitable than the last one. And on a smooth basis, right? There were quarter-to-quarter variations. That's because they were putting all these fixed costs in as they could spread out over a large number of customers, and they got better and better at running all these data centers at higher and higher utilization rates. So technology always has a return to scale. And what I wonder about with AI is ultimately, who knows if the models are commoditized or not. But I know what's not commoditized ever: a company's proprietary data and the way that they put that data to work. And I think large companies in any industry may end up having an advantage because they're going to have this massive pile of data, and they're also going to have the capital, the wherewithal, the human talent to invest it against AI. And you could see a couple of things happen. You could see those companies have better margins because they're able to do things at lower cost by putting AI to work and bringing technology to bear. So they'll have higher profits that would ostensibly result in higher valuations and squeeze out smaller size competitors in any industry. I think the more likely thing is they'll pocket some of those gains in the form of higher margins, but they'll reinvest some of those gains back into the business for faster growth and gain share across any given industry. So I do wonder a little bit about, does AI help bigger companies in any industry get even bigger? It's a thesis. We'll see what happens over time.
Yeah. Historically and simplistically, I mean, big picture wise, companies or anybody, the only reason you invest anything in technology is to try to become more productive and more efficient. And today, technology is just advancing at the speed of light. I mean, it's hard to keep up with the changes that are taking place. But in spite of all that, where do you think the skeptics, AI skeptics, could be right?
I think, as I highlighted, I mean, I think there are some challenges to adoption around this because it does, I think, require a fundamental rethink of a lot of organizations and how they operate. I think that's sort of the biggest thing. So they could be right in their timing. That's probably where I'd land. I'm trying to think, Mark, if there's anything else I'd add to that. But
so,
I think,
so the lumpiness issue, the timing of how,
yeah, I think
how
so.
It becomes effective. Yeah.
And look, I think there's other things that could derail the investment cycle. So if we had some sort of just general economic slowdown, the core businesses of the biggest spenders in AI would slow down, even though they're tapping external financing like the debt markets to fund CapEx. If the core businesses of these companies slow down, they would undoubtedly, in my mind, take the foot off the accelerator on spending, and that would be a headwind. If the Fed heightened to the point where they forced a slowdown in the economy, I think that would have an impact directly in slowing business conditions. Indirectly, it would probably make the cost of capital go up. You'd see that in the debt markets. The bonds that the big technology companies have been issuing, that the interest rate there could become more expensive to the point where the return on invested capital equation just doesn't work for them for some amount of time. So I think there is a possibility that macro conditions could be a headwind here also.
So what I'm hearing is change is coming. The only question is it going to continue to be a race, or is it going to be a more thoughtful process? But let's move to the healthcare world with Eric Potiker, our healthcare analyst. And Eric and I have had a few conversations, and I think I've kind of complained about the incredible amount of our GDP that gets allocated to healthcare. So I've been a little, especially now, just switching over to Medicare and realizing that if you really want to get something done, you got to get in line. And if you're willing to pay cash, you have an advantage. So I thought I was going to go to Easy Street from insurance to Medicare and be able to get medicine for free. Well, I guess it just doesn't work that way. Anyway, Eric, thanks for being here. And let me ask you, from a top-down perspective, how do you see AI impacting the whole healthcare complex?
Well, Mark, thanks. I'm probably going to play off of some of the things Kevin just talked about in terms of data and scale. But I'll start with sort of the inefficiency that you're alluding to in the healthcare system. I mean, there are a lot of reasons for that, but one of the main ones is how poorly the system uses data. And by uses, I mean first accesses, shares, and understands its own data. And that data is balkanized, siloed, spread among lots of different quote-unquote owners. And I think AI, one thing it has the potential to do is allow much more robust analysis of companies, entities, of their own data. And ultimately, it should enable a better way to share data across the system. And that would lead to improved patient access. One of the issues you mentioned, waiting, that's a growing problem in this country. And I think you would get better patient access, you would have lower administrative and less wasted cost, less cost burden, budgetary pressure on federal and state governments and on employers, all of whom are the ultimate payers of healthcare. I think that's, as you think about where the benefits to the society would be, it really would be that efficiency, lower cost, better access, and ultimately less budgetary pressure.
I'm going to give you a little setup for my second question. My GP, actually my GP has been my brother-in-law until recently, and he recently retired. So I had to get a new GP. And in the process of getting the new doctor, I asked for my medical records, and they were sent to the new doc who I recently met. And I had a little emergency situation where I had to go in. And she went to the medical records. She had 200 pages of sloppy handwritten, sorry, brother-in-law, sloppy written notes. And it's like, oh my God, just that process could be so much more efficient than looking through 200 pages of handwritten stuff. But from a bottom-up perspective, how will individuals like me benefit from AI being used in the healthcare sector?
Part of what I talked about in the answer to the first question was better access to data, better availability that would manifest itself in your patient record. And I think, assuming that data can be accessed, that leads again to just better patient access to more tailored care. And that should lead to better outcomes and ultimately to a healthier population. Because if any provider can more effectively understand and more holistically understand, Mark, your healthcare story, your history, where your risks are, where your drugs interact potentially with one another and with perhaps a new drug that someone might be prescribing for you, the better that you and others as holistic entities are understood, the more likely you're going to get a more tailored, better form of care. And there are lots of diseases that are spectrum diseases, spectrum conditions, whether it's ADHD or various neuropsych diseases, where understanding where a patient fits on that spectrum and what the proper treatment for that specific spot or that specific cohort is, again, is just going to lead to more accurate, tailored care. And I think that's ultimately what an individual patient and what the population at large should see from, again, better access to data.
Yeah.
To actual health data.
You know, a friend of mine is on the board of a very large hospital complex, and the CEO of the complex keeps talking about how the AI access to data of their 5 million patients, in essence, just helps them make much better diagnosis. Not everybody's, you know, one-off. They can look at 5 million cases to do a better job than just a single doctor. So it's pretty interesting. So I guess I got to ask you from an investment standpoint, are there going to be any clear winners or losers from AI within the whole healthcare industry? And I see maybe the winners are just the public, like you said, in terms of the data access. But in general, do you see any clear, obvious losers or winners?
Within healthcare, I don't really. I don't think it's clear yet. And I think one of the differences is, you know, Kevin can see in his sector, and we see it in some other sectors, this tsunami of capital that's coming into a sector that can immediately drive revenue and earnings growth at significant inflection accelerations. Healthcare is one of the spenders at this point. So they're not seeing any more resources flowing into the healthcare sector. So it really becomes actually a productivity question within healthcare. Can healthcare be more productive? And I think AI holds the potential for that, but I don't think that's going to manifest itself in faster revenue or earnings growth for the most part, because I think these healthcare companies are going to have to, you know, these are going to be table stakes for them investing in AI. And for those who don't, I think they will rapidly lose share and go out of business. And for those who do, I think the benefits they're going to be giving back to their customers in the terms of better pricing, better rates for hospital companies, in terms of what they're going to be required to give back to ultimately the payer. And whether that's the government, or that's an employer through commercial insurance, you know, I don't expect to see a lot of margin in profit growth in near to the benefit of many companies in the space. I do think there are some companies, and then the healthcare sector writ large, in many ways are stories of companies who are benefiting from the current inefficiency in the healthcare system. And to the extent that AI, better access to data, better analysis, remove some of those inefficiencies, a lot of the companies that have been depending on those inefficiencies as a significant piece of their business model, they're going to find that they're no longer there and they're no longer able to mine those inefficiencies. And that would leave less opportunity for some of those companies. So I see more room for losers, if you will, because of the healthcare system becoming more efficient.
I can't remember if it was a conversation with you or not, but we were talking about the federal deficit rising, and there was a comment that the general healthcare cost was growing at a relatively big rate and accentuating the size of the deficit. It seems that we can't keep spending more and more and more on healthcare as a percentage of GDP. It seems like the only solution is for healthcare to get more efficient just to keep our federal budget deficit in control. So hopefully AI can help solve for that with their productivity and better outcomes. Any chance of that happening?
Yeah, by making the system more efficient, that should absolutely reduce a key pressure point that has been driving up healthcare costs. I mean, there are other dynamics as well. Demographics, AI is not really going to address demographics ideally, or potentially it could actually accentuate some certain demographic problems. But to the extent that better care can be provided more efficiently and pricing can be moderated, that should be a positive from the perspective of the government and from the perspective of employers. And if you think about the average employee who gives up a certain percentage of what would otherwise be a larger salary increase to cover health benefits that their employer is paying for, but passing that cost on to the employee, that should also mean in some way better real wages for an employee. Although Andrew can probably speak to that more intelligently than I can. But just to answer your question succinctly, yeah, efficiencies should reduce pressure on the healthcare inflation that's been taking place for many, many decades. Yeah. Won't be the only part of the solution, but it's a key piece.
Thank you very much, Eric. So as you said, let's go over to Andrew. Andrew, again, he's our economist for wealth management. And how does this ultimately play out in the economy? How is this going to affect us, and how is it going to affect investors and the like? So how do you think we'll see AI affect economic activity, and are we actually going to see it in GDP data?
Yeah, no, great questions. So we're looking at this very closely across the spectrum of, we'll call it the economic data, whereas the earlier speakers were talking about it, I think, mostly from the company data perspective. There's a parallel universe that we can usually see the same things. And so we already are seeing a lot of investment in the different national accounts data, particularly in equipment spending that corresponds to a lot of the chip investments. So first, we're going to see it in equipment and software and data construction spending. It's already there. And it's a key reason why fixed investment spending overall has been growing in the mid to high single digits. And when we zoom in on the sectors, the type of investment that we'll call high tech spending, the growth rates are something on the order of 20% in real terms. You know, economists tend to focus on real growth, whereas stock analysts tend to focus on nominal growth. So there have certainly been a lot of price changes, but even adjusting for those price changes, very large changes in quantity that's contributing to the 2% growth rate environment that we're in today. And then the second way we'll see it is something that's going to play out a little bit slower, probably not a big story in 2026 or even 2027. But what we're going to see is higher rates of productivity, particularly in the sectors that have more adoption. And the way you would see that in the sectors where there's a meaningful change to the efficiencies, you're going to see more GDP for the same level of employment growth. And so what we're looking at right now is, are we seeing places where job growth is possibly slowing or slower than where it was maybe in the past 2 years, and where we can see that it corresponds to faster adoption. And I would say the story for now is we're not really seeing a really stark pattern across the economy. Certainly in some places, like in high-tech employment, it looks like there's a slowing in employment that we can link to AI adoption, but not really across the economy. And when we look at surveys, what company surveys are telling us is that AI is helping to augment a small number of tasks for a lot of different people in aggregate, but it's not holding back hiring in aggregate that much. But over time, what we're expecting to see is, in the official productivity statistics, more signs that we're getting more GDP per hour of work. The good news is the starting point is we're already in a pretty solid, actually I would say really strong productivity backdrop, where productivity growth over the past 3 years has been about a bit over 2.5%, which is already above average. And what that means is AI adoption should help keep the U.S. economy in an above average productivity environment over the next decade.
So as Kevin said, this could be kind of lumpy, or I said it could be lumpy. He explained that it could be faster or slower, but change was ultimately coming. And right now it feels like a race, and that probably moderates. But if you compared today's economy and what's actually taking place, how does that compare to other big innovations that we've seen in the past?
So there are a number of surveys that are asking people, as well as businesses, what's their adoption of AI tools looking like over a different 2-week period. And now they've been tracking this for a couple of years since the introduction of ChatGPT. And what I would say is, you know, with the overall usage rate of AI tools is around, depending on what survey you're looking at and how you weight it, it's between, let's say, 40 to 60% of overall. If you ask someone if they've used it in the past week or in a longer period of time, and that compares to, let's say, whether, you know, the personal computer in the 80s or the internet and other, we'll call ICT innovations in the 90s, that's a much higher number than where we were in the early part of those, let's say the early third or first 5 years of adoption of those technologies. So I would say right now, AI adoption is moving at a relatively faster pace compared to those other technologies. Now, I think what we're looking for is more signs of it in the productivity data. And I'd say it's not there yet, but I think the expectation is it's something that we would see more clearly in the coming 5 years. So we haven't really seen it super clearly so far, but I think conviction is it's going to be quite a bit more noticeable the next five.
Yeah, it seems like it just has to show up. I mean, just like the internet, it was difficult to peel out what was actually productivity because of that. Or, you know, as I talked with Eric before about when they came up with penicillin, I think in 1947, it created a huge productivity effect in terms of our economy over the next decade. But how do you peel out how much of it was because of the labor pool's health? But anyway, do you have a guesstimate of what the ranges of the GDP impact could be that would bring us above what is a historic average?
Yeah, so there's a lot of economists have been looking into this question, and there's certainly a wide range, but I would say the consensus is clustered around a 0.5% to a 1% boost in productivity over the next decade. And so what that means is GDP growth would be about 0.5% to 1% faster than the typical, let's say, productivity environment that we've been in the past 40 years. There's an assumption there that we get a fairly fast rate of investment to keep up with the AI technology. But that's a pretty large number when you accumulate it over a decade. And just for some context, that means if we stay in this over 2.5% productivity growth rate environment. The idea is your baseline is that you start at 1, 1.5, and then you add another 1. That means you stay in this 2.5 productivity growth rate environment for a longer period of time. And that really meaningfully adds up to a much bigger GDP growth level after a decade or after 15 years. And that's making some assumptions about how much the efficiency gains are for different industries and how fast, you know, how widespread is the adoption in terms of how cost effective it'll be. But when you take the, you know, the combination of just how many tasks look like they are exposed to AI, how cost effective it will be, how many of those job tasks are cost effective to replace with an AI tool, and just how, what those efficiency gains look like, how much productive does it make you as a writer? How much productive, efficient does it make you as a software programmer? There's just many, many examples by companies that suggest that really could add up to a pretty significant economy-wide effect that we're talking about, 0.5% to 1%.
I mean, the biggest effect, I mean, just think what it could do for our national debt hole that we've dug our way into. They say the only way to get out of our debt problem is to grow out of it. And if we get 1% additional GDP growth because of AI productivity, that will affect everybody in the country.
I'm glad you brought that up. And so that's something where the CBO and other think tanks have looked into this. And so if we get a 1% faster growth from productivity, it could cut the deficit by up to 2 percentage points. So the deficit right now is right around 6. And so 2 is a very large number. And that doesn't get into potentially some other changes to demography that were brought up earlier. And it could tilt it one way or another in the sense that it could keep people in the labor force for longer, or it could encourage some retirements. But certainly you would expect it's going to provide a boost to the deficit outlook if we get those growth numbers.
And keep the country solvent. That's the most important thing. There's a lot of talk about AI and AI and workers and displacing workers, people losing jobs, or there's certain tech guy who says none of us are going to have to work. We're just going to get free money, which sounds a little crazy. But do you think workers need to be afraid? What do you think is going to happen with the jobs and their income? What do you expect?
Well, I think the level of anxiety around AI that we see today, it definitely makes a lot of sense. We see a lot of pretty concerning headlines. And what you do see is the exposure to AI technology tends to fall highest with on people that are either higher wage workers or workers with more educational attainment. And that's a little bit different than prior technological disruption, where we thought of it as maybe affecting workers with less educational attainment. So I think it's rational for people to have some anxiety about it. I think what history shows us is through the cycle that when you have an innovation boom, there is some worker displacement, but there's a lot of employment gains elsewhere that tend to more than make up for the displacement within the most affected industries. So I think Kevin, you know, he brought up new occupations that'll be created. Right now, we can see the effect of some upstream industries benefiting from some extra employment growth, like in construction, particularly around data centers. And I would say just the general effect that what you have is when there's just a lot more spending happening economy-wide, that tends to generate more employment demand, more labor demand. And so that's how we can get on net still a pretty decent outlook for labor income. I think the conservative forecast would be that the labor income growth maybe won't keep up with GDP growth, or another way to put it is the share of the pie that labor gets might shrink, but the pie is growing. And I think what that means is profits are probably, in that context, could be growing faster than the labor income. But it doesn't necessarily mean that unemployment is going to rise. And I think what we see so far with that option of AI is that on net, unemployment is maybe up a tenth or maybe two, but we're in this environment with pretty fast adoption and job growth is pretty solid.
So simplistically, you know, for my simple mind, over an extended period of time, you're suggesting that you're not going to have a ton of unemployed people, that their wages will be rising, may not be rising as fast as the benefit to the investor via capital, But in essence, both labor and capital will be net better off with an increase in productivity.
Yeah, that's my base case. And I think as long as the pace of adoption looks similar to what we've seen so far, I wouldn't expect to see an environment where the unemployment rate shoots up because it's displacing workers.
Yeah.
It just looks like it's something where there's going to be some people that need to change industries that are the most displaced. But if they have a lot of education, the odds that they can move from one industry to another are pretty high. So that is the types of workers that could be most affected also happen to be pretty adaptable. And I think that's the silver lining of some AI exposure now.
Well, you're probably right in that they say it's affecting the white collar jobs at this point. And since they are more highly educated, hypothetically, they should be a little more adaptable in terms of different types of employment. So anyway, we've been on the call for a while. I just want to say thank you to all three of you. You guys, I mean, my access to you guys really makes a huge difference in terms of what I do for my clients and what I do for myself. And you are a huge value to me and my clients. And I don't know how to express that strong enough. So thank you guys for helping me and being here today.
Thank you, Mark. It's great.
Thanks, Kevin.
Yeah, great conversation.
Eric, yeah, Andrew, thank you very much. Okay, everybody, this ends another episode of Newport Legacy Insights, and thank you very much for listening in, and see you next month. Bye-bye for now.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.
This podcast was edited by Resonate Recordings.